ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Today we will read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, the characteristics of King Puranjana, texts 57 to 61. Kvachit pibantyang pibati. Kvachit pibantyang pibati. Madirang madavihvalah. Madirang madavihvalah. Kvachit gayati gayantyam rudatyam rudachi kvachit. Kvachit dhasantyam hasati jalpantyam anujalpati. Kvachit dhavati dhavantyam tishtantyam anutishtati. Anushete shayanayam anvaste kvachidasati. Kvachit shrinoti shrinvantyam pasyantyam anupasyati. Kvachit jigrati jigrantyam sprishantyam sprishati kvachit. Kvachit chashoshatim jayam anushochati dinavat anukhrishyati hrishyantyam muditam anumodate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When the queen drank liquor, King Puranjana also engaged in drinking. When the queen dined, he used to dine with her. And when she chewed, King Puranjana used to chew along with her. When the queen sang, he also sang. Similarly, when the queen cried, he also cried. And when the queen laughed, he also laughed. When the queen talked loosely, he also talked loosely. And when the queen walked, the king walked behind her. When the queen would stand still, the king would also stand still. And when the queen would lie down in bed, he would also follow and lie down with her. When the queen sat, he would also sit. And when the queen heard something, he would follow her to hear the same thing. When the queen saw something, the king would also look at it. And when the queen smelled something, the king would follow her to smell the same thing. When the queen touched something, the king would also touch it. And when the queen was lamenting, when the dear queen was lamenting, the poor king also had to follow her in lamentation. In the same way, when the queen felt enjoyment, he also enjoyed. And when the queen was satisfied, the king also felt satisfaction. Purport. The mind is the place where the self is situated, and the mind is conducted by the intelligence. The living entity situated within the heart follows the intelligence. The intelligence is herein depicted as the queen, and the soul, under mental control, follows the material intelligence just as the king follows his wife. The conclusion is that material intelligence is the cause of bondage for the living entity. The point is that one has to take to spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. In the life of Maharaja Ambarisha, we find that the great Maharaja first engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. In this way, his intelligence became purified. Maharaja Ambarisha also used his other senses in the service of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity in the temple, nicely decorated with flowers. He engaged his sense of smell by smelling the flowers, and he engaged his legs by walking to the temple. His hands were engaged in cleansing the temple, and his ears were engaged in hearing about Krishna. His tongue was engaged in two ways, in speaking about Krishna and in tasting prasada offered to the deity. Materialistic persons who are under the full control of material intelligence cannot perform all these activities. Thus, consciously or unconsciously, they become entangled by the dictations of material intelligence. This fact is summarized in the following verse, and I'll just read the following verse for completeness. Thus, consciously or unconsciously, they become entangled by the dictations of material intelligence. So the next verse says the result. In this way, King Puranjana was captivated by his nice wife and was thus cheated. Indeed, he became cheated in his whole existence in the material world. Even against that poor, foolish, Even against that poor, foolish king's desire, he remained under the control of his wife, just like a pet animal that dances according to the order of its master. Om agyana timirantasya gyana anjana shalakaya chakshurun militang yena tasmai shri gurave namaha vandeham shri guru shri yutapada kamalam shri gurun vaishnavanscha shri rupang sagrajatang sahagana raghunathanvitang tang sajivam sadvaitang savadhutang parijana sahitang krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitanshcha. So it's quite a long verse to repeat, but anyway, the essence is that the king was just 24/7 following his queen and doing whatever activities she wanted to do. So later on in this canto, Narada Muni will explain all the story and all the meanings of all the his analogy, yeah, for understanding of King Prachinabarahi. So, and then actually, you can, if you compare those chapters, that is chapter 29, the talks between Narada and King Prachinabarahi, after three chapters. So, you can basically relate verse to verse, yeah, verse from the story of Puranjana, and then verse in this chapter, basically step by step comparison, explanation. So this particular portion of this chapter is explained there, is summarized there in one verse. It's a very nice verse. Yatha yatha vikriyate gunakto vikaroti va tathato padrashtatma tadvrittira nukaryate. Formerly it was explained that the queen is one's intelligence. While one is awake or asleep, that intelligence creates different situations. Being influenced by contaminated intelligence, the living entity envisions something and simply imitates the actions and reactions of his intelligence. And the purport to that verse, a short purport. The queen of Puranjana is described herein as intelligence itself. Intelligence acts both in the dream state and in the waking state, but it is contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Since the intelligence is contaminated, the living entity is also contaminated. In the conditioned state, the living entity acts according to his contaminated intelligence. Although he simply remains as an observer, he nonetheless acts being forced by a contaminated intelligence, which in reality is a passive agent. So, upadrashta, the word which is used by Narada Muni to explain the position of the soul in this material cage of the body, subtle and gross, is upadrashta, witness. So the living entity is actually, in the material state, is inactive. It is explained in the Bhagavad Gita a lot, especially in the fifth chapter, how the soul situated in this material body of nine gates, also the nine gates are mentioned there in the Bhagavad Gita, is basically inactive and a witness. And the point of gaining transcendental knowledge is realizing one's inactiveness in relation to material nature. Yeah? And those who don't have transcendental knowledge, they identify with the activities that are performed by the senses and the modes of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartahamiti manyate. So this is what happens to a conditioned living entity, which is vimudha. It is fooled, cheated by ahankara, and he thinks himself the doer of the activities that are actually performed by the modes of nature and by the senses. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita 5:8-9 says, a person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. So the person in divine consciousness, he's aware of that, inactive towards matter. Because what is matter to the soul? It's a very alien, very alien substance, jada, material energy, and spirit. Yeah, and the only media between the two is Paramatma. Yeah, that decodes. Paramatma decodes the information, you know, for understanding of the soul, and the soul is bewildered in that way. So the soul is inactive, and it's like the condition is such a identification due to ignorance, like the driver in the car. That's a famous example. Person is totally different from the car, but because of attachment, that identification happens. So this is the missing link in the chain. Yeah, attachment that produces identification. Because if you have a car, it's not a cheap thing. Yeah, so attachment is there, or it's my car, and then somebody scratches it, or tire is punctured, you feel hurt. Yeah, you may feel angry, you may feel hurt, although nothing's happening to you. You are as you are. You may feel very comfortable, just warm and cozy inside, but then something happens to the car and you are affected. In the same way with any other material object. You can just see how we become affected if we are attached. If we don't extend our mamata, our possessiveness towards some object, then you don't care because there is no attachment. But if something is within the scope of your ego, yeah, something happens to it, oh, we feel painful, very bad. And although we have nothing to do with it, and we become, it's also explained, Vasudev preaching to Kamsa, the philosophy of the self, just trying to dissuade him from killing Devaki, and he speaks a few nice verses. In one verse he explains how we can understand this misidentification of the soul with the material body. It's like forgetting oneself while watching some dream at night. Yeah, we forget who we are, we forget where we are sleeping, and we watch ourselves in some another reality. Yeah, in the same way, this existence, which we call, you know, wakefulness, is also a dreamy state. If you look at it from the perspective of the soul, it's like dream within. You have one dream, and then you have a dream within that dream. That is that Advaitavadis. Okay, they have three levels of reality. They explain reality in three levels. And to some degree, we can adopt that terminology. There's the Paramarthika, Vyavaharika, and Pratibhasika. So Paramarthika is what's happening in reality, spirit. Yeah, Vyavaharika is, you know, practical thing, practical world. Yeah, and Pratibhasika is what you see, like hallucinations, dreams, imaginations, and so on. You know, So this dream within a dream, in one conversation, Prabhupada was explaining it like that. Even the state which we call awakeness is also a dream from the point of view, from the Paramarthika, from the ultimate point of view of spirit soul in its pure state. So, in this way, we forget our, just as in dream, we forget our situation, in the same way, while being in this world, we are so much absorbed in these perceptions that we forget our original situation, our paramarthika situation. It's like watching a movie. Yeah, you get so engrossed, so enveloped in that, in the show that's going on the screen, that you kind of identify yourself with the experiences that the actors going through, yeah, and that's why people cry in front of TV while watching some, you know, soap operas or something like, or people feel fear watching a horror movie, people feel excitement watching some fight, and so on. Because there is that, identification with what's happening on the screen. And then it keeps on pulling you in. It's not easy to just switch it off and go away. You go, what's gonna happen next? And just a little more, what's gonna happen next and next and next. And this is how we are getting entrapped in this material world. What's gonna happen next, and life after life, movie after movie, you know. But through the ages of material existence, the soul is inactive. It is in a sleeping state. So the activity of the soul, what is our real activity? This is explained in this purport, Maharaja Ambarisha. These are activities of the soul in relation to Krishna, serving Krishna with everything that Krishna has given us, serving Him with eyes, hands, legs, mind. This is the wakefulness for the soul, the wakeful state. And so to come to the point of that wakeful state, that wakeful situation is our immediate goal, we can say. Yeah, this is not the final goal in itself, because when you are awakened, then what do you do next? You don't just remain, you know, blinking your eyes and looking at the ceiling. You stand up and you go and engage in activities. Yeah. So, but at least an immediate goal is to become awakened from this illusion of misidentifying myself with matter, which causes me so much trouble. And for this we need spiritual intelligence to awaken. And the Lord is helping us by a negative way and in a positive way. In a positive way, there is always transcendental knowledge that is being preached in this creation. There is always media by which people may receive knowledge of God to a different degree, higher or lower degree. There is always there. And on the other hand, Jai Shri Shri Gauri Tai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Shri Shri Radha Shyama Sundara. On the other hand, there is material nature that tries to awaken the soul by pinching with the threefold miseries. And this is her service. This is her service to the Lord. And she awakens living entities, and she can really do so up to the point of liberation. It is explained that the modes of nature in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita explain that the modes of nature, they both liberate and condition the living entity and liberate the living entity. So Maya Shakti, her primary function is to condition the living entities, but the ultimate purpose of this conditioning is to ultimately awaken living entity. This is not your eternal situation, this is not your true situation. And Maya Shakti, it is explained in the Shastra that Maya Shakti has her two functions. This is the same energy, but she acts in the two ways. One way is avidya, Maya, that covers non-jiva with ignorance. And in fact, as explained in the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit asks Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto, 8th chapter. The whole chapter is a series of questions. So the first questions are in relation to the soul. How is it possible that the pure self, that has nothing to do with matter, is totally, you know, identifying itself with the body and trying to enjoy the modes of nature? How is it possible? How is that connection possible? You know, how can you bring the two together? Very difficult to understand. Then Shukadeva Goswami explains that the only way that it is possible is because the self, although pure, it is influenced by the energy of the Lord. And that energy is very powerful because it's Krishna's Shakti. Davihyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. It is very formidable energy. And a minute living entity has no that power to rise against it. But there's only one solution to the problem, is that mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. But those who surrender unto me, mayam etam tarantite, they easily cross this material energy, because Krishna is the master of Maya. And if he likes, Maya will subside and everything will become clear. So Maya has that power over the living entity. She is empowered by Krishna. Why she does that? How she does that? She's empowered by Krishna to put living entity into bewilderment. Krishna can empower anybody with to unlimited degree. Yeah. That point of empowerment is there, even in the second chapter of the 10th canto, when Krishna orders Yogamaya, please transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. She says, she kind of feels intimidated. Balaram? But Krishna, I'm giving you that power, no problem. Yeah, and you'll become famous by that. Yeah, and Balaram will carry that name, Sankarsana, one who was pulled, Krish, from the Dhatu Krish, was pulled from the womb of one mother to another. So Krishna empowers Maya for different tasks. And this is the most common task of Maya, is to put us into bewilderment. And she does that because Krishna is behind her. But then at the same time, she is Krishna's servant. It's not that she is envious of living entities. Maya is not envious of us. That, oh, let me keep this jiva away from Krishna. Ha ha ha. Yeah. Maya is not like that. She's Krishna's maidservant, pure devotee. So this is ultimate objective, is to awaken the conditioned sleeping souls to the reality. And she does that by inflicting upon them threefold miseries. Yeah. So then, after some time, a living entity might think, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is not what I'm created for, not what I'm existing for. What is my actual kyami, kena mora jara tapatraya? Who am I? Why I'm suffering? This is awakening, the living entity awakens to knowledge. These are the questions that we ask, not who am I? Why I'm suffering? Yeah, Sanatan Goswami. So it is explained that Maya has a second function, Vidya Maya. vidya, material energy, she reveals to Jiva, she awakens Jiva to the knowledge of the self, the same material nature, yes, vidya maya, by the influence of the mode of goodness, sattva guna. So that type of spiritual intelligence can be bestowed also by material nature, according to the philosophy. Because sattva, it produces illumination, yeah? It illuminates things, allows us to see things as they are, and up to the point of what we call atma-jnana, knowledge of the self, yeah? So we can get to the point of, to the liberated state, but it is the zero, yeah, from the minus you can come to zero, because in order to know Krishna, you can't know Krishna by material mode of goodness. You need assistance of Krishna's spiritual, internal energy for that. And Maya can't help us with that. You need a Krishna's internal energy come down to you by the medium of parampara, transcendental knowledge. Spiritual master, the orders of the spiritual master. So, but at least up to liberation, even material nature can help one do that. But for a devotee, everything is done by Krishna personally. Yeah? Somebody else, like yogis, jnanis, who strive after liberation, they mix the practices of jnana or yoga with a little bhakti. And bhakti becomes secondary and auxiliary to their practices that they consider to be their main sadhana. Yeah. But it's ironical because whatever liberation jnani attains, it is all by the mercy of bhakti. Even though a jnani may think, I attain liberation on the strength of my austerity and meditation. But it is bhakti. Because of mercy, of bhakti alone, one may attain liberation. But then, yeah. And they think like that, yeah. But in the case of a devotee, this knowledge of the self is awakened very quickly. Yeah, as a secondary byproduct of devotional service. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cheyadahaitukam. So, when one serves the Supreme Lord, then on the strength of that service, Ashu, very quickly, Vairagyam, there's detachment from matter and Jnanam, and there's Jnana, knowledge of the self. It's produced very quickly as a byproduct. So, when we perform devotional service, the natural consequential result is detachment from matter and being situated on a spiritual platform. So by performance of sadhana bhakti, one can climb up to the platform of Brahman. Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma Na Shochati Na Kankshati, then we will not have material hankerings and lamentations. You know? It is a platform of self-realization. A devotee automatically achieves it just by doing devotional service. And Krishna himself, personally, even bypassing, as I explained previously, in case of jnanis, there is that vidya maya, maya in her kind of a knowledge-bestowing feature. Yeah, through mode of goodness, she awakens some living entities to the knowledge of the self. But in case of devotee, Krishna himself does that. He explains this in the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Shloki, that he enters in the heart of his devotee. Tesham aham, tesham eva anukam partham. in order to bestow my compassion to those who were described previously, Machitta, Madgata Prana, Bodhayanta Parasparam, who have given their consciousness to me. Madgata Prana, their whole life is dedicated to me. Bodhayanta Parasparam, they enlighten each other about me. Kathayantascha Mam Nityam. Yeah, and they speak about me always, every day. Tushyanti Charamanti Cha. In this way, this is their satisfaction and this is their joy. Tushyanti Ramanti. So, Krishna said, to these souls, I, with the torchlight of knowledge, Jnana Deepena, Bhasvata, very bright torchlight of knowledge, I dispel ignorance in their hearts. Yeah. So Krishna wants, for his devotees, Krishna wants to do everything personally. Yeah? Everything personally. What's that? Yoga Kshemam Vaham Yaham. Krishna makes it a point to say, Aham. I do that. Whatever they lack, I give it to them. If my devotee lacks some self-realization, I give it to him. You know, I dispel the ignorance in his heart. I do that for him. So then, a devotee becomes self-realized, and as we read in the Bhagavad Gita, while touching, smelling, looking, and etc., he knows he doesn't perform these functions. Whatever has to do with material energy. Yeah. On the other hand, devotional service is nothing but engagement of the senses. Devotional service is nothing but sensory activity. What do the liberated souls in the spiritual world do? They please Krishna's senses with their senses. Yeah, they string beautiful garlands. They play beautiful music, beautiful songs, all for the pleasure of the Lord. They prepare beautiful, wonderful, tasty preparations. It's nothing but the sensory activity. And glimpse of that we can gain in this world by serving the deity. Srila Prabhupada explained that archana, service of the deity, the activities that are there performed by the pujaris, they are the activities of the liberated souls. Putting Krishna to bed, awakening Krishna, feeding him, and so on. So, these devotional service is nothing but the sensory activity. And so then, how is it that a devotee doesn't identify himself with that? So then we're... No. Because we can understand that these senses that are spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita, these are material functions of the senses, yeah? And the devotee doesn't identify himself with the material functions of the senses, but this, when each sense is engaged in its spiritual capacity, when it is in connection with Krishna, this is a spiritual sense, yeah? In other words, soul has its spiritual senses, which are part of its spiritual svarupa, the inseparable part. And this eyes, the nose, the mouth, and legs, hands, whatever, what we have in here, in this material body, is nothing but the reflection of those original senses that are meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. But here, they are called material because they are engaged in service of oneself. One tries to employ one's senses in one's own. So that's when they become material. And then the coverings are there. Once that consciousness comes, the coverings are created. So, ultimately, we have to awaken our spiritual senses, like Maharaj Ambarisha, and serve Krishna with all our senses. This is the platform of spiritual existence. This is the awakened condition. Yeah. full of activity, always dynamic, not static. Yeah, not static. People have that, even in the movies, it comes very often, and you know, they show some liberated soul, you know, and it's like, it's always dressed in white for some reason. It's like, that conception is there. There shouldn't be any colors. It's always like kind of a cloudy atmosphere around, you know. Oh, sorry. I don't want to go there in that cloudy world. Better I stay in this world, and at least there's some variety. So this is how Mayavad, this is how Advaitavad contributed to materialism in this Kali Yuga, because they negate spiritual variety. And then what you can be attracted with? Okay, there is no sufferings, but I mean, like, you know, can you tell me something positive about it? No. As soon as you speak something positive, you impose a quality on something. But it has to. Brahman has no qualities. It is undifferentiated. And then, all right. Okay. Thank you. Better I go back to my family. At least I have some joy there, you know. So this is how impersonalism contributed to materialism, because they don't give people, it doesn't give people alternative for engagement. Yeah. Whereas in devotional service we have plenty of engagements, active sensory engagements, which are spiritual, yeah, which are spiritual, always in connection with Krishna, and they're liberating. They're not conditioning us. They're liberating us, yeah. But mind has to be engaged, yeah. Number one, Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayor. Number one thing mentioned in regard to Maharaj Ambarish is the mind. And when the mind is purified, then intelligence is purified. And when intelligence is purified, it directs the soul towards the reality, towards the its ultimate benefit. So, spiritual existence is in this way full of drinking, full of singing, full of talking, full of walking about, smelling, hearing, whatever is mentioned here in this verse, what Puranjana was doing, you know. But all that, all these activities in the spiritual world, they're manifestations of bliss, yeah. And they produce, in their turn, they produce even more bliss, yeah. Because they are part of that spiritual existence. Mm. And in material world, these activities, they produce misery. So again, the point is, by being attached, we have to take on the karma and suffer. And this is what causes misery, yeah, in the material world. Yeah. Identification. Yeah. There's a very nice story to illustrate it. I heard there was one artist, you know, who was very skillful and very talented, and everybody was praising him. At this, was painting beautiful pictures. At the same time, he was a very sinful man. You have it very often in the material world. A genius is very often a debauchee. Yeah. So at the same time, that artist was a very sinful man. So with the same hands, he used for painting beautiful landscapes and beautiful people, and he would drink and steal and, you know, harm others and so on. So then the time came for him to die, and Yamaraja came, and he said, "Okay, time to go. Who are you?" I'm Yamaraj. You've performed so many sinful activities with your hands, you know. So now, let us go. Time to get punished for that. No. He said, I will not go. You know, I know philosophy. You know, it's... I'm engaged by the Lord in these activities. Yeah. I'm not the doer. Yeah. It's all ultimately performed by the material nature, and material nature acts under Krishna's supervision. So why I have to be punished? Why not him? You know. And then, okay, Yamaraj said, okay. He thought a bit, and then he returned back under some disguised as a customer, the same Yamaraj, and then he came to the, you know, showroom, and then he said, wow, what a painting. And look at this one. I never seen such a beautiful landscape. You know, wow, I admire your talent. Is it you who painted everything? He said, yeah, that's me. I said, okay, and then, cello, let's go. So then he got him red-handed. So whenever there is a, you know, whenever there is a question of getting punished for your nonsense, no, this is all, we know, you know, Kamsa speaks philosophy, you know, to Vasudeva and Devaki. We are just, you know, toys in the material nature, everything is performed, you know. Same thing, somebody else was speaking. Yeah, Hiranyakashipu, yeah, speaking philosophy, Atmagyan, you know, in the Bhagavatam. So by the way, this just the Atmagyan is not such a, even demons know it, you know. So knowledge of Krishna is the actual thing, yeah. But anyway, this is the point. When we identify, due to our ahankara, we have to suffer karma for that. And a devotee, he performs all activities on behalf of Krishna, and therefore he doesn't take karma. It's like the Prabhupada gave example of a soldier fighting in the war field, and he kills many people, but he gets rewarded. But if after the war is over, he comes back home and starts killing, you know, for his own sake, then he'll be put in jail. You know, this is kind of a good example to understand this point. You do things on the behalf of a powerful man, you're safe. You know, somebody has any problem, then your boss comes and, okay, what's your problem? the devotee's boss is Krishna. So a devotee, whatever devotee is appointed in doing, even externally it may appear not so good, like Arjuna killing. Okay, somebody may say it's not the best thing to do, but then if it's what Krishna wants, then sarva dharman parityajama mekam sharanam vradya aham tvam sarva pape bhyo mokshayishami mashuche. Don't be afraid, I liberate you from all your sins. You know, there is no any sin basically, yeah. So just surrender unto me, and this is the devotee's position. He's not getting karma, yeah, because it is all on behalf of Krishna. So, but if there is that doership, if we claim the activities to be, if we originate the activities, yeah, then okay, you have to be responsible. You have to be responsible for them. So that's why, to be always on the safe side, not to get entangled in karma, we always have to act in consciousness of an instrument. Yeah, we are instrumental in the execution of the activities of our spiritual master. We are instrumental. Our spiritual master, he is Sakshadharitvena samasta shastri uktastatha bhavyate eva sadbhihi. This is his position. He's Sakshadhari, he is directly the Lord, but at the same time, he is not the Lord, he is Krishna's dear servant. You know, he never wants to claim, I am God, I am Krishna. Spiritual master is Krishna's, that is his glory. Yeah? And we come under the rulership, under the care of spiritual master who engages us in so many activities, and in a sense we are instruments in his hands, and he is instruments in the hands of his spiritual, and this is parampara, and ultimately it comes to Krishna, and ultimately is nothing but Krishna's activity. So where is the question of being entangled in any type of karma, any sinful reaction, if it's all done by Krishna? And for Krishna there is no papa punya, it's all absolute and spiritual and meant for the benefit of all, for the performer, for the recipient, or whatever. So it's nothing but, parampara is nothing but an extension of Krishna's activities, Krishna's will, Krishna's intentions. So the more we stick to that position as an instrument, the more we are safe, yeah, the more we are immunized totally from the influence of material modes. And as soon as there is a hunker that, oh, I do this, this is, you know, I made so many devotees, I built so many temples, I distributed so many books, then when that I becomes big, you know, then, okay, there's something wrong in consciousness. So then Krishna is kind and He repairs, rectifies devotees' mistakes and whatever, misconceptions. So, Hare Krishna. If you have any questions on this or any comments, please.
Is it the purified mind helps to make the intelligence pure, and then pure intelligence helps the soul to engage in devotional activity, or is it the reverse way, that purified intelligence helps the mind to become pure?
Well, judging from this commentary, it seems that the mind initially helps the intelligence. In the life of Maharaja Ambarisha, we find that the great Maharaja first engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Lord of Krishna. In this way, his intelligence became purified. So his intelligence is that guiding faculty of the soul, the deliberation of the soul, you know, giving, you know, where to direct your activity, and the mind just executes that. But from where the contaminated intelligence, let's say in this material existence, we find ourselves in this conditioned state, a living entity. Where living entity will gain that spiritual intelligence from? Yeah. It should be some media, yeah? Srila Prabhupada said, the point is that one has to take to spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. So where is the source of spiritual intelligence? If intelligence is contaminated and so much engrossed, like a henpecked husband following this queen, which symbolizes this. So the thing is, yeah, through our senses, through the mind, yeah, Krishna will enter one's life, yeah, through the mind, through sensory engagements, yeah, a person will do something with the help of his senses, knowingly or unknowingly, for Krishna, and then through the senses, in that way, Krishna's internal energy will purify the mind, which in turn will purify the intelligence. And there will be some sane discrimination will be generated by that contact. Yeah. Initially, there is always a sensory contact with Krishna. Yeah. Some sensory contact is there. That's how devotional service starts. Yeah. So senses, then the mind, then it reaches the intelligence. then intelligence gains some strength to, you know, to direct the mind and the senses, okay, in a proper direction. So it's kind of a, one helps the other, you know. Then with your intelligence you understand, oh, if I engage my mind and senses there, I am benefited. And then okay, so let me do that. And then through the sense, again, internal energy enters the mind, then again reaches the intelligence, kind of a helping each other, yeah.
Is it all the spiritual activities are done by the spiritual senses of the soul? The soul has spiritual senses as well as material senses. And the material activities are done by the material senses? Or it could be either way, that material senses can be actively engaged in a spiritual activity or devotional activity?
Well, devotional activity cannot be performed by material senses. That's the... starting from this point, this is the bottom line, you call it. Devotional service is an activity of liberated platform, so it cannot be performed by material senses. It cannot be performed. Yeah, material senses. Why they are called material? Because they are directed for one's sense gratification, which is a false existence. Yeah, which is a false platform. So basically, that's what draws the line between the two, in understanding what is material, what is spiritual. So, but the sense is one, but how you use it, you know, the eyesight is there. The soul has its eyesight, but when, you know, how do you use it? You know, so when you use it to bring Krishna pleasure, this is spiritual eyesight. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, it is material. If you use it for your own enjoyment, yeah. So sarvopadhi vinirmuktam. This is devotional service, free from identifications, free from upadhis. Yeah, free from upadhis means you remove, you peel your existence, all these peels that cover the essence, and then you reach the actual thing inside, which is I'm Krishna's servant, Krishna Das. You know, after peeling off all those upadhis that are there, and then, you know, this is sarvopadhi vinirmuktam, and this is on this, with this consciousness, devotional service is performed. You know, with this consciousness, yeah. At least theoretical, understanding should be there. You know, if there is no practical realization, at least theoretically we should understand. And then, this is a platform to start with. Otherwise it will not be sadhana bhakti. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it won't be sadhana bhakti then. If we don't fulfill that criteria of sarvopadhi vinirmuktam, yeah, there's a switch. Yeah.
You mentioned three states: parimartika, paribhasika. I missed the third one. What was it?
No, paramartika or the ultimate stage. Yeah, vyavaharika, the practical reality. The highest reality, the practical reality, and the dreamy, you know, state. These are, yeah.
What about the hallucination state?
Yeah. Well, the lower two...
What is it called?
The lower two are illusory. Yeah. Oh, okay, what is it called? Pratibhasika. You have it there. Oh. Paramartika, that is the highest reality. The, you can say, practical reality is vyavaharika. Vyavahara, you know, dealings, you know, practical dealings. And pratibhasika is what you see in dreams or in hallucinations, in mental concoctions and so on. So, but yeah, this is terminology that comes from Advaita philosophy. But you know, to some degree, we can relate to it to a certain degree. You know,
state of hallucination called?
Pratibhasika.
Pratibhasika.
Yeah, you have it. I heard you said it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Ajay. All right.
Hare Krishna. Savai Mana Krishna Padarvindaya. So, Maharaj Ambarish first engaged his mind in the lotus feet of Krishna. So, what does this exactly mean? I mean, how long can you remember the lotus feet of Krishna, engage your mind in the lotus feet of Krishna? Mm-hmm. You know, I try to remember the lotus feet.
Yeah.
So, what does this mean?
Thinking, remembering, this is the way we engage our mind. This is the activity of the mind, to think, to remember, to envision. Yeah? This is how we engage the mind in Krishna's service. Yeah? Does that answer the question? Yeah. No, to that devotee, yeah. Sorry. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.